You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody, and happy Monday after a long 4th of July weekend. I hope you're all doing well. Thanks for spending time with me. I got a fine guest co-host with me for the duration. He's going to help me get back into the swing of things because he's definitely in the swing of things. His name is Matt Rothschild, not only the host of the podcast Wisconsin Forward that you can find all across the Civic Media Radio Network in our podcast space. You can check him out on Spotify, Apple Pods, and of course at civicmedia.us. He's been doing double duty, especially today, has sat in for me a couple of times while I had some days off. Thank you for that. And was helping to host on Matt and Air on Air today and has stuck around all day long here at Civic Media. Thank you so much, Matt Rothschild, who joined me today. It's always good to see you, my friend.
We need more of that to build back our civil society and to oppose what's going on at the highest levels of our country, which is so distressing.
Starting there this afternoon, and so much news while I was gone, we're going to get to some of it today. Folks, if you're looking for my takes on these big, big items, don't worry, we'll get there. We got time this week to do that. We got great guests to help us out. We've got today, I'm so excited, Senator Dianne Hesselbein. She's the ranking Senate Democrat in the Wisconsin legislature. She's going to join us at 4:30 to talk about the adoption of the biennial budget. At 5 p.m. today, we've got some breaking news and sound about whether or not Tony Evers will be running for a second term. Matt and I will discuss that a bit. We also, of course, want to hear from you. At 5:30, we're going to let you weigh in on what your immediate reactions were when you heard that the Wisconsin Supreme Court had ruled that the purported abortion ban from the time when women couldn't vote in this country is actually unconstitutional and not a thing here in Wisconsin. We're going to ask for your thoughts on that, your immediate reactions when you heard that news break this past week. That's at 5:30. Coming up this week, we're going to have an expert consumer advocate tomorrow on the show telling you, sharing with us how you can expect the big brutal bill to impact you. That relates to some of today's breaking news. Donald Trump, of course, announcing, unsurprisingly, I would say, that, oh, yes, we've got more trade wars threatening certain countries with up to a 40% tariff. Do we have more Taco Trump? Time will only tell. It seems that Donald Trump's number one trade negotiating strategy is to threaten, put some in place, then back off and call it a win, even when it's not actually moving the needle. That is some breaking news today. Coming up on Wednesday here on this program, we're going to have the Director of State Relations and Statewide Outreach for UW-Madison talking about the improvements in the biennial budget for University of Wisconsin universities across our system, but also the specific impacts relating to capital improvements, the buildings that are needed at our state's flagship university in Madison. On Thursday, we've got Republican Representative Duke Tucker joining me. We're going to talk about system reforms to make democracy work better for all of us, regardless of party, specifically about a piece of legislation that Representative Tucker introduced on term limits. You've heard me on this topic before. I believe in them. I believe in them. And basically, every single elected office you can think of. And on Friday, I'll be joined by my guest, Jim Santel. Jim and I will give you our retrospective, a very high level, on what the Supreme Court's rulings this past term mean for civil rights and the power of the executive. High level, we're going to try to avoid the getting down into those rabbit holes of wonk that Jim and I sometimes are wont to do. But let's return to some of the breaking news of these past few days. Of course, again, the trade war news coming out today. Not sure what's going to happen there. We'll keep an eye on it. Internationally, over the weekend, we had Donald Trump quietly removing sanctions from Russia. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth then deciding to remove air support from Ukraine and a bombing of Kyiv that then occurred. I mean, talk about action and consequence, it's about as clear as day what we've got going on there. Nationally, Matt and I are going to spend some time today talking about the incredible loss of life in Texas. Now, I've heard some coverage on some other radio stations, which I'm not going to mention here, that seem to indicate that the DOGE cuts and the attacks on science writ large from the Trump administration has nothing really to do with the 95 souls lost in Texas due to flash flooding. Matt and I are going to get into that. And just in case you've missed me talk about this in the past, back when I was in graduate school as an economist, I worked on a little thing called a willingness to pay analysis for what? Flood risk management. And what the heck a 100-year flood really is, because I've heard that term tossed around a bit in these last few days. We're going to detail that this afternoon with all of you, and we're going to get into what do you think, what would you pay, what do you think taxpayers should be paying for flood risk alert systems and flood risk management? That there's such a confluence of these issues in the news every single day. It all relates together. And Matt, I just wanted to touch upon this. Laura Loomer, if folks aren't familiar with her, is a right-wing influencer. Some would call her a conspiracy theorist. She is definitely a propagandist for Trump. She's been alleged to have given Trump a list of people to fire, which he then fired and said it wasn't because of... I mean, she's kind of all over the MAGA movement. And she had some incredibly... horrifying things to say, Matt, that you brought to my attention as I was coming back into the country after a long holiday weekend away. Share with us some of what Ms. Loomer said and why it is so maybe even outside of the pale or beyond the pale for the MAGA folks.
Yeah, I mean, the level of sadism, cruelty, gleeful cruelty is just amazing to me among some of these people. So here's Laura Loomer on social media. Alligator, this is about alligator Alcatraz, so-called, in the Everglades, where Trump has built up a new detention center. Alligator Lives Matter. That's her joke on Black Lives Matter, I suppose. Funny, funny. And she continues, the good news is alligators are guaranteed at least 65 million meals if we get started now. She adds, there are 65 million illegal aliens in the United States. Actually, there are 65 million Latinos in the United States. She is equating them all with being here illegally and gleefully happy if they get eaten by alligators. I mean, that is one of the rudest, harshest, meanest things I've heard out of these Trump folks. Though I just heard another one, I've got to say, from Ann Coulter, who just said, that we didn't kill enough Indians because she was seeing a posting about a Native American professor at the University of Minnesota, Melanie Yazzie, history professor, speaking at a conference on socialism. She didn't like what she said, so she said, we didn't kill enough Indians after the genocide the United States committed against Native Americans in this country. So that's where we're at in MAGALand right now, MAGALand. It's very sadistic.
And the sadism, of course, is reflected in spades in the big, brutal bill. I don't care how many times Derek Van Orten or Speaker Mike Johnson lie about it. People will die because of one of the most unpopular pieces of legislation ever adopted in this country's history that amounts to the single largest transfer of wealth from working people to the billionaire class here in this country, that amounts to the single largest defunding the ripping away of healthcare, emergency food assistance, all sorts of critical programs that eligible, hardworking Americans or fully disabled Americans or Americans that are caring for fully disabled or elderly folks, the single largest gutting of programs that help support working people in this country. This isn't about strengthening any of these programs. This is about cutting. And Matt, I wanted to get into this because Derek Van Orten has said some incredible things, and he is so full of it that I the inability to tell the truth, the complete talking out of both sides of his mouth all of the time is completely infuriating to me. And I wanted to just paint a picture for everybody before we got to take care of a little business here. And I want you, everyone listening, to remember the last time you had to interface with any system that wasn't responsive. I don't care if you're trying to make a hotel reservation. You're trying to address a customer complaint you had with some company, or you're trying to get benefits that you are entitled to out of a system. Maybe it's interfacing with your employer's healthcare system and your insurer. Every single step that is put between you and the outcome that you seek, regardless of whether or not you're entitled to whatever that relief is, whether it's coverage for a prescription drug, whether it's the price that was promised in an online advertisement for that hotel room, whether it's a defective product that you should be getting a refund for, whatever it is, every single step that a company or a system puts between you and the outcome that you seek, they have models on this, everybody. They know exactly. Every additional step means that people will not be able to access the insurance, the refund, the deal, the product, the relief, the thing that they seek. And Derek Van Orten knows it, and Mike Johnson knows it. And it has nothing to do with eligibility or, frankly, this thing that lurks as the excuse in the Republican Party's attacks on working people, the concept of deserve. You can deserve the benefit. You can have earned the benefit. You can be eligible for the benefit. But by creating layers upon layers upon layers of paperwork and administrative hassle and gutting the employees that help people navigate those systems and file that paperwork, they are ensuring that tens of millions of Americans will lose life-saving health care and life-saving emergency food assistance. Make no mistake, the big brutal bill makes us sicker, makes us die sooner, and makes each and every one of the people in the middle class poorer. Why? For tax cuts for the very rich. I just wanted to take this little cut from Derek Van Orten. I'm not sure if we've got time, but we'll take it on when we come back on the other side. Matt, your thoughts. I just find it... it's so ridiculous. Do not talk about strengthening these programs. This is about creating red tape to kick people off of programs and systems and benefits that they are entitled to.
Yeah, this has been studied six ways to Sunday, too. I mean, most of the people on Medicaid are going to be cut off, are working already, but they're not going to be able to jump through the hoops and do the red tape, and then they're going to be kicked off even though they're eligible for it. That's the level of trickery that's going on right now.
Trickery. The big brutal bill is a big brutal bag of tricks. We discuss more. We showed you Derek Van Orten's complete hypocrisy and talking out of both sides of his mouth when we come back. My name's Maggie Dawn. I've got Matt Rothschild with me, and each and every one of you, join us. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got guest host Matt Rothschild with me because my mouth isn't warmed up after a very long holiday weekend. We've been talking about the fact that the big brutal bill has now been signed into law. We're going to get to the state's biennial budget with a fantastic guest coming up at 4:30. We'll be joined by ranking Democrat in the state Senate here in Wisconsin, Diane Hesselbein, to talk about the bill, what's in it, what's not, why some Democrats voted against it. You're not going to want to miss that conversation. But let's get back to it. Folks, I painted a picture of, and I want everyone to think about the time when you are, and probably the most notable example is fighting with your health insurance company over coverage for something. And every time you get transferred to someone else, you got to submit other paperwork. Oh, that is not the correct pre-authorization form. Send this different one to your doctor. Oh, no, it's supposed to be faxed and not emailed. Oh, no, we actually need a hard. You know what I'm talking about. We've all been round and round. And every single person that runs systems knows that the more obstacles, literally every single thing that you have to do, if there are more things, fewer people will actually access the benefit or the thing that they are seeking. And Republicans, the MAGAs on Capitol Hill, know that too. This isn't about strengthening Medicaid. It is about gutting it because they have to try to pay for the tax cuts for the billionaire class. To say anything else is a lie. That's its function and purpose. It has nothing to do with strengthening it. It has nothing to do with the integrity of the program. That's bogus. Not at a nearly $1 trillion cut to Medicaid. And I want you to think about how frustrated you got. Maybe you even gave up a few times. I know I have, disputing charges on my credit card, all kinds of different things. And then I want you to imagine you're not just working the job that you've got right now, you're working another job. And then I want you to imagine you've got two toddlers at home, or a child, a teenager, and you're caring for an elderly parent. I want you to imagine a life where you do not have the free time to get anything done. We've all had those moments in our life. And then I want you to make that system that you have to navigate doubly more complicated. Can you get it done? What if you don't have Wi-Fi access? What if you can't pay your cell phone bill? That's what we're talking about here. And anybody who has ever worked in social work, child care, education, any of these fields, or worked in a public serving hospital will tell you the people that needs these programs the most, that are working full time or caring full time, won't be able to access them even though they're eligible. And yet Derek Van Orten lies through his teeth and says things like this.
Just because we live in rural areas doesn't mean that high quality healthcare should be rarely accessible to us. I have very, very few hard lines when it comes to these issues that we talk about regularly. One of them is this, that I've been crystal clear with the leadership in the House here. If during this budget reconciliation process, they're going to try to cut rural healthcare, I am not on board. I will not be on board with a package that does that. If anybody is trying to cut any type of rural health care, it's just not going to happen on my watch.
Well, it just did, and he voted for it, and then gleefully tweeted or truthed or whatever he was on, retweeted a tweet that says 17 million people just lost health care, and Derek Van Orten retweeted it with the word yes and an exclamation point. Matt, is he not operating on Earth One? Like, what's the fact gap here? Because both things can't be true at the same time. You can't say I'm against any cuts to rural healthcare in my congressional district and then vote for the big brutal bill as if it's not going to cut healthcare in Derek Van Orten's rural congressional district.
Yeah, I mean, he just turned to putty in Trump's hand, just like Ron Johnson did for the opposite reason. But the callousness of Derek Van Orten issuing that or yes in all caps with an exclamation point to 17 million people just lost health care. And also on that tweet that he said yes in capital letters, exclamation point two, said 18 million kids just lost school meals and 3 million Americans just lost food assistance. He's cheering that kids are losing free lunches and that 3 million Americans are going to lose food assistance. I mean, there is something seriously pathological about Derek Van Orten and this MAGA crowd that delights in the suffering of other people.
So everyone that lives in these six GOPers, the MAGAs, congressional districts in this state, when you or someone you know or love has their Medicaid taken from them, when they go hungry, when your hospital closes or reduces its hours, when there are fewer attending physicians, when there is not mental health care, when there are not emergency mental health care beds for people in serious mental health emergencies, when that happens in your congressional district, you know who to thank. And it is every single congressional Republican from the state of Wisconsin who voted yes on the big brutal bill. We can call it the murder bill because, yeah, people are going to die as a result of paperwork. I have never heard a Republican ever be like, you know what we need in the United States is more paperwork. When they talk about deregulating the clean air requirements and clean water requirements or getting rid of all that pesky red tape for businesses, all they want is more pesky red tape for regular working Americans, and it will cost us dearly. We're going to talk about the biennial budget with State Senator Dianne Hesselbein. She's the ranking Democrat. Help get this one across the finish line. We'll talk about the improvements over our current budget and why some Dems voted no. Next, right here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Keep it locked. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us, and happy Monday afternoon. My name's Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. A bit of breaking news, international news. Then, of course, we're going to turn to State Senator Dianne Hesselbein to talk about our state's biennial budget. But a bit of breaking news. Documents filed today in a court proceeding that the United Nations is convening. Okay, so we're talking about international law here. The document filed today by the nation of El Salvador assert that the United States, quote, facilitated the use of the Salvadorian prison infrastructure and that, quote, the jurisdiction and legal responsibility for these persons lies exclusively with the United States. To translate, El Salvador just told the United Nations that the U.S., at all times relevant, has had jurisdiction over the persons in one of the world's most dangerous prisons that the U.S. disappeared some people to. That would be in direct contradiction to representations made by various administration officials and the Department of Justice, lawyers appearing on behalf of the United States and the Trump administration in various federal courts in numerous matters across the country dealing with these disappearances of people without sufficient due process. That is a big deal. It seems kind of ticky-tacky. It is not. It is not. It is a big deal. We'll see what happens if the Trump administration has any responses as the days go by. Also, within the last hour, City of Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson announcing that the Trump administration has yanked a $34 million redevelopment grant to help with the 6th Street corridor to the loss of nearly 450 jobs and a key revitalization project for the City of Milwaukee. Of course, as goes Milwaukee, so goes the state. And speaking of the state, thank you for your patience, State Senator Dianne Hesselbein, and congratulations on a signed and completed biennial budget. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. I'm happy to be on.
Let's talk about what this budget has gotten done for Wisconsinites that was absolutely essential. There are a few key improvements that will return manyfold to Wisconsinites. Tell us a little bit about that.
So one of the things we saw right away that Joint Finance Committee voted on is special ed reimbursement. We have been pushing, Jill Underly, DPI superintendent, was pushing for 90%. The governor put 60% in his budget, and the Joint Finance Committee put a special ed reimbursement at 35% the first year, 37% the second year. Now vouchers get 90% special ed reimbursement rate. So honestly, we know we should all be doing 100%, to be honest, and actually yes, pay for the education that all kids need. But the Republicans made it clear they're going to do 35 the first year, 37 the second year. And we were able to push the Republicans to 40% the first year and 45 the second year. That was a hard negotiation. And that was not easy because they were just willing to have just pittance for special ed reimbursement. So that was a win.
If you can, State Senator, please explain to people what you mean by a special ed reimbursement. Like what's getting reimbursed and why is this so critically important? And why the hell would a voucher school get 90% if our public schools are only getting 45%?
Yeah, so special ed reimbursement is they know how much they would get for people that have an individualized education process. Maybe you have a kiddo that might need help reading, they're dyslexic, they have some learning challenge or physical challenge, and so they need extra support throughout the day so that they can do their level best. And they figure out what that level is and how much that funding they need, and they only get 30% back of whatever that costs in public schools right now. And in the voucher unaccountable schools, they get 90% back. So they already have a leg up on our public schools. So Governor Evers proposed 60%, trying to get it more in line. And we were fortunate to get 40 and 45%. And it's unfortunate. I really wish we could do 100% for every single kiddo who needs help, because, you know, different kids have different learning needs, different things they need. And we should just be paying for it instead of just nickel and diming them.
What happens? So who picks up the tab? How does the school system make up for the other 65% of the funding need for each child that's in special education?
Thank you for asking. And I think sometimes we get in the weeds and we forget that, like, people that are listening to the radio are like, why is that a thing? Why is that that politicians fight over this? And why don't we just give kids what they need to succeed? The school district picks up the rest. So literally property taxes are raised because they have to pay for these students that have these special needs. And lots of times that's one of the reasons why we go to referendum for operating referendum year after year, is because the state is no longer funding what we should be for education, special education, and other education. So it's really putting property tax people and everybody in the state of Wisconsin on the hook. So, including those that pay rent, right? Because they also have to pay for it.
Of course. Your rent reflects the property tax levels. If property taxes have to go up because your school district requires a referendum because the state refuses to fairly fund special education, that we all pay for that. So would this be considered one of those things that I've heard people talk about as an unfunded mandate? In other words, school districts are required to provide special education, unlike voucher schools who can deny admittance for no reason or any reason they choose to whichever student they choose. Public education districts are required to provide this, and yet the state is saying, we're not going to provide you with the funding that you need to provide that special education. That's what we've got going on here, right?
That's what it is. It's really the haves and the have-nots between the public schools and the voucher schools.
Talk about some of the other improvements. Again, just to summarize that one, the ask was to go to 65. It was at 30. We're going to end up at 45. Folks, it doesn't require a mathematician to see that we are moving in the right direction and that that will be absolutely lifeblood funding for especially smaller school districts that have relatively high proportion of students that have special needs. Tell us a little bit about some of the other improvements in the budget.
Yeah, some of the other ones were in higher education. The Assembly Republicans were on record with the press saying that they wanted to gut and cut $87 million to our university system. And, you know, what would that mean? And so we're like, okay, how does that happen? And really, talking with a lot of people, it was clear that we were going to, if that would have gone through and Republicans would have passed a budget just with Republican votes, they would have had $87 million deficit and cutting to the university system, where they would have closed all two-year campuses, pretty much all two-year campuses across the state would have closed, and probably one four-year comprehensive. And looking to see where the numbers are and students are and teacher ratios, it would have devastated a community if we would have had to close a four-year college. So instead, we were able to put money into the university system, not as much as I would have liked, I'll be honest. I think with a special ed reimbursement too, I would have liked to have done more, but this is a budget is like harm reduction. Yes. And so that's what you do when you have to compromise. It's tough because I wanted to do a lot more for university system, but I was also able to get some building projects that were very much needed. One, a library at Polk in UW-Oshkosh. That's extremely important. They have mold in that library. They have students that were, you know, contacting librarians to get the books for them to set them outside because it wasn't safe to go in there. There are some pipes that burst about a month ago. So having a functional library, a four-year comprehensive, is extremely important. And also we got a UW lacrosse building that's been waiting since 2014 to be built. It's been enumerated every year. Every year the Republicans play games with the University of Wisconsin lacrosse. I don't know why. We were finally able to get that building done. And then one also in UW-Milwaukee as well. So we're able to make some strides for building projects where students, faculty, and the entire community is going to benefit from those buildings. So I was really happy to see that those things were done for higher education.
Senator, can I just jump in here, Maggie?
Please.
Minority Leader Hesselbein, I'm hearing from my progressive friends, including progressive legislators in the Capitol here, a lot of anger that there was no increase in regular spending K through 12. They wonder why the governor didn't put that down as a line in the sand as he did with child care. Why he didn't fight harder for it, and would it have been possible to bargain for that? You were in the room there at the end. What can you tell us?
I asked for per pupil spending, absolutely. I think that's extremely important. We asked for reductions in property taxes. We thought that was great. I know the Republicans wanted to do their two tax cuts, and I said, what about property taxes? Let's talk about that. That was an absolute no-go. I pushed for Medicaid expansion, lost that fight, postpartum Medicaid. There's like a lot of things that I had on the list. And in true negotiation fashion, when you leave, you're not, you know, were there some wins? Yes, but there was a lot of things that we did not do. And I think both sides, I think Republicans and Democrats are disappointed with what ended up happening because we wanted more.
Absolutely. Do you think the governor should have taken a harder line at the beginning? Would that have helped?
I'm not sure. It might have helped a little bit with negotiating, trying to figure some of that stuff out, but he didn't. And this is where we are today.
Just a bit of a follow-up on the university funding, Senator. And folks, if you're just joining us, we have ranking Democrat State Senator Dianne Hesselbein. She was at the negotiating table helping to get the state's biennial budget across the finish line. The swing in UW system-wide funding is enormous from where the GOP's budget proposal was to where you ended up. It's a nearly $336 million swing to the net positive, saving or building new buildings, again, as you mentioned, at the UW, Oshkosh, La Crosse, and Milwaukee. Those three campuses alone cover tens of thousands of students. Would you say it's fair that if folks believe in the university systems, they believe in the Wisconsin idea, even though Walker tried to write it right out of existence when he was in office, and the Wisconsin idea being to have an educated citizenry that can maximally participate in our democratic processes and to support broad-reaching higher education, if folks believe in that, especially making it affordable for every family that has a student that can get into one of our university systems, that they can, university system schools, that they can afford that degree, that program, they should be thanking you and the Dems that were at the negotiating table helping to get that $336 billion swing to the positive. Or am I overstating that?
Well, I don't think they need to thank us, but I think the Wisconsin idea is alive and well, and that certainly was on my mind. My daughter just graduated from UW Oshkosh this spring. I don't have any more kids that are going to be going to the schools, but knowing that she couldn't get a book out of that library, knowing that she had papers due and she was trying to figure out how to finish them, and seeing her friends and some of her first generation friends that graduated from the university and seeing what that did to their families and those communities, how can you not invest in a higher education system to give all people the chance to learn? It's fantastic.
Amen to that. And I will say it, everybody who believes in the Wisconsin idea and the university system here in Wisconsin, one of our crown jewels, the thing that is an economic engine for the entire state, say thank you to Senator Dianne Hesselbein, as well as State Senator LaTanya Johnson and the other leaders who helped make this possible and took the tough votes. Senator, very briefly, please, and we'll come back to this on the other side, tell us a little bit about the improvement in the child care funding.
Yeah, so when we sat down, it was clear Republicans, and they've been saying this all along, that they didn't want to put any money into child care. And that is devastating because we've been hearing and going to child care centers all across the state, learning from our child care providers and seeing what they need. And was this enough? No, we wish we could have done more. But this does help us in the right now to get through to when the Democrats are hopefully in charge in a few years. We'll actually be able to fund it where it should be.
Folks, we'll put the exact numbers to that when we return, because anything over zero when it came to child care was a win for working families. And our current guest, State Senator Dianne Hesselbein, helped get that done. Our discussion of the state's biennial budget and what it means for your family continues on the other side. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a fine co-host with me today. His name's Matt Rothschild, host of the podcast Wisconsin Forward. You can find it wherever you find your favorite podcasts, as well as at civicmedia.us. Matt and I are happy to be joined this half hour by ranking Democrat in the state Senate, Diane Hesselbein. She was at the negotiating table helping get the state's biennial budget across the finish line, specifically advocating for three key areas of funding improvement that cover the educational spectrum here in Wisconsin. We talked about the university system funding, a $335 million swing. We talked about the fact that special education funding, the replacement rate for what school districts locally spend for each child that is in need of special education, that went from 30%, it's moving up to 45%. Keep in mind the inequity there, because voucher schools, who are accountable to nobody and no one, get that funding level replaced by the state at 90%. And we just began before the break talking about early childhood education, the third leg of the stool, and the fact that Republicans had proposed $0, as if nobody needs any childcare, which is simply insane to me. And Senator Hesselbein, tell us exactly what funding commitment you were able to negotiate with Senate and Assembly Republicans in the biennial budget for childcare.
Yeah, we were able to get over $330 million to childcare, including some direct payment to providers, which was really important to us. That was a hard sell. That wasn't something that the Republicans wanted to do right away, but we were able to do, I think, 110 the first year and then money the second year. And it came with all sorts of, you know, interesting things. But one thing I don't think the Republicans knew before I sat down at the table is I worked in childcare when I was a college student, and I would go home and work on the far east side of Madison in childcare. And I mentioned it in negotiations, like, you know, a lot of us have knocked on doors and I'm like, have you ever been bitten by a dog? You know, when you're campaigning, and some of them are like, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, well, it's worse when it's a two-year-old, because they're not just biting you, they're biting other people. And it's like, you have to keep your eyes on them all the time, and it hurts. Their teeth are sharp. Yes. And so the idea that they wanted to really relax a lot of regulations, I just couldn't be with, because I was like, there's absolutely no way we can do that in the state of Wisconsin. So what we ended up really was a true compromise. Little worried about some of it, but honestly, the fact that the first year we're doing direct payments to provider was a huge win for the state of Wisconsin.
Again, across the educational spectrum, early childhood education, which is another way to say childcare. That's what we're talking about there. There was earmarked funding in the compromise to help four-year-olds get school ready. This is all to the benefit, because otherwise, guess who ends up footing the bill for all of this? And again, the ball rolling downhill is your local school district, which means you, the taxpayer. So again, key in that early childhood education. We talked about special education in our K through 12 programs, the funding replacement rate increase, and finally the university system. With all of that, all of those epically important improvements in mind, Senator, some of your Democratic colleagues have been quite vocal in their opposition, both online and in press releases. And I have watched people compromise over legislation and battle over budgets at the local level for many years. This is tough stuff. I want you to address people that are speaking out against the budget. Again, the art of what is possible, or an accurate understanding of what is actually possible, should be the barometer for critique at some level, should it not? Speak to what it's like for you as someone who's trying to lead through these difficult negotiations.
Yeah, well, one thing I would say is elections matter. And I want to be sure to just take a few seconds to say thank you to Matt Rothschild for talking about fair maps for so long.
Yes.
Because we've had fair maps, we were able to flip four seats, right? Last election cycle. In a tough date night for Democrats, you know, they delivered a win in Wisconsin to Donald Trump, but also Tammy Baldwin. And as we're seeing the mess of everything going on in Trump, you know, that Trump was winning state after state, we were winning state Senate seats that night. So we were being like, oh my gosh, this is great. Oh my gosh, what's happening in Pennsylvania? Oh, what's going on there? So elections matter. And I think one thing we heard from the campaign trail, and all these people in purple districts heard loud and clear, is can't you all work together? Why is it so divisive? Why does it have to be like this? So when I was invited to the room, I worked with every single senator in my caucus to say, these are the things I think we should try to get. This is my list. What do you think of this? What else am I not saying? What am I missing here? I think in the past, it was more of a top-down thing, but I am very much a believer in a big tent, and I want everybody giving me their best advice going forward. So we went from 11 Democrats to 15. There's 18 Republicans in the state Senate. So I got to be at the table to negotiate the best deal we could get for the state of Wisconsin. did I get everything I wanted? No. Did the Republicans? No. And I've been watching, you know, some of my colleagues have been complaining about the process or the final budget, but I've also seen on right-wing media, they have been very angry at the Republicans, thinking that, you know, Tony Evers did a whole run around the Republican Party. So they're not happy with everything either. And maybe that's the sign of a true compromise. We have some things we can hold on to as beacons of light. They got a tax cut, and maybe in the middle, Wisconsin won.
Again, if you say you want bipartisanship, if you say you want legislatures to get things done, this, folks, is what it looks like. It's never going to be perfect. And if your state representative or your state senator is running in a district where they really don't have any competition, understand that it is very easy for them to criticize that which they are not particularly accountable for, which brings me back to the fair maps. Gerrymandering is bad for everybody. Accountable representation means bipartisanship and forward movement. I will also hat tip to my colleague Matt Rothschild and everyone who's been fighting for fair maps. And certainly to you, State Senator Diane Hesselbeck, our special guest, talking about the impacts and the improvements in the state biennial budget. Folks, when we come back, I'll ask you, should Governor Evers be running for a third term? When should he be telling us about this? All of that coming up next, as well as some breaking news from the governor himself about his prospects for a third term. Keep it locked. My name is Maggie Dawn. I got Matt Rothschild with me. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.